Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting live through our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. This is an important hour, and it's an hour that we call our commentary hour because I either have a guest on who will give us a commentary on a particular theme, or I share one. This is my own commentary this hour. I intend to look at the larger problem of global warming and the resultant environmental disasters that are happening, that have happened, that are happening as we speak, and are going to continue to happen and even get worse. I will give you the best insights that I can about what we should do to prepare for this and what happens if you're living around the world. Now, we have people listening right now all over the world. This is a worldwide radio program. Yes, there are people in the greater New York City area who have been listening to me on, for example, our sister station, WBAI, for more than 41 years. But we have people in all the different states, in India, in the United Kingdom, in France, and they're all experiencing crisis. So I'm going to deal with as much of this as I can, plus I'm going to give you just very basic information to help you get through this current crisis and prevent the next one. I'll also be giving you some of the what I consider the unintended consequences to the real estate market, therefore the places that are going to collapse or be substantially adversely affected. And I'm also going to be giving a commentary from Chris Hedges called The Great Flood that will be shared in a few moments, and also one from Juan Cole from Informed Comment on Governor Rick Scott, that's Governor of Florida, enabled Irma, that's the hurricane's fury, through climate denialism. And also from Common Dreams, look around. The cost of not acting on climate are adding up fast. And also from the conversation about solar storms and what they mean. But first, let me share an overview. Right now, there are at least 4.5 million homes in Florida without electricity. Now, a home doesn't have just one person. If you averaged it, you're probably looking at 3 people per home. So you're looking at a minimum of 12 million people who are without electricity. Let me explain the consequences of that, because a lot of them live on my block where I live, where I have my ranch in Southwest Florida and have for over 22 years. That means that they will have no toilets. Their refrigerator and freezer will thaw. And within a day to 2 days, the whatever was in the freezer or refrigerator will go bad. It means that they'll not have any drinking water because when your electric goes out, so does your water pumps. And the water for the city is all on those pumps, which means that you won't have not water. But when the pumps go back on, you're going to have polluted water. I don't care where you're at in the world, you don't want to drink standing water. And oxygenation of water and the purification is important. But now you're going to have water that's also brackish water. You're going to have polluted water. And so how do you get water where you don't get sick? And then you start thinking, gee whiz, in Florida today it's 100 degrees. You have no air conditioning. What if you're sick? What if you're mobile? What if you're in an assisted living center? The emergency backup systems are very, very few and far between. So most people are simply going to suffer. What happens when you're in a mosquito heaven, high humidity, especially at sunrise and dusk, you can't go outside. And yet you can't stay inside because it becomes an inferno. Those insulated houses now keep the heat in, not the cool, because there is no cool. So the quality of life diminishes. Before the hurricane hit, virtually all water had been sold out, as had food. And so filling stations are closed all over Texas and Louisiana and Florida, but also up in Alabama. People began to leave. Over 6 million people left the state. Well, when they left the state, where did they go? You couldn't get reservations because every single place was already filled. In fact, Georgia had the first evacuation notice in its history because it had never had a hurricane in greater Atlanta. Now it did for the first time. So where do the people in Atlanta go to? Where are the people from Florida going to Atlanta go to? And a lot of people did this all in panic. then when they started to hear how bad the Keys were, and the first it was going to go to the East Coast, they panicked, they filled up their gas, and they left. Florida's a long state. It can take you 6 to 8 hours just to drive out of the state. You've got at least 450 miles from Miami, but Florida has got another 100 miles below that for the Keys. So you're talking about 8 hours to get out of the state. And when you're stuck in traffic that looks like a parking lot, you're going to burn gas. And if you have your air conditioner on, you're burning more gas. So most people are going to run out of gas before they get out of the state if they have a normal vehicle. If they have a truck, it's going to go quicker. And if they have an SUV, even quicker still. Now, most people are not going to have stored gasoline in their vehicle or have any kind of a back-end trailer to take with them filled with gas. So then you begin to see all these vehicles pushed off the side of the road because they were out of gas. Then they get to some place and there's no food there, there's no gas there, and there's no water there. So you're looking at a massive, massive catastrophe. Now, just imagine what it means if our states, now this is just theoretical, but what if Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi or Louisiana, all impacted by the flooding and the tropical storm and the hurricane, what if they refused any more refugees from Florida? What if they said, we have no more resources here, we're already to the max, and it's going to strain us? You see the consequences if you're not planning on where an environmental refugee is going to go? Now, we're not thinking about that because we're going to open up our state lines and our homes. We're going to do all we can as human beings to try to ameliorate people's suffering. Now think about what is happening over in the countries in Africa, 54 countries in Africa. Think of the environmental refugees. The sun is beating hot. There's no place for them to go. They have no money and they have no food. Now, these are not the refugees that went from Syria, frequently highly educated, and or Libya, very educated and had a lot of money compared to those arrested. It was the most affluent nation, country in Africa. But once Gaddafi was gone and we destroyed his country, where did they go? Well, most of them went to Europe. So we got to see the people who had some resources to get there. What about all the other people that are 1,000, 2,000 miles away? They're going to die. So we're looking at a worldwide crisis. At the very time that we were putting all of our energy onto Florida and the coming storm, we didn't pay attention. There was a similar series of monsoons and flooding in the subcontinent. Now, the subcontinent is India, Pakistan, which is the northwest part of India. You also have Bangladesh, which is on the southeast corner of India. Then you have Myanmar, which used to be Burma, which comes up beside it. And you have other countries in that area. 41 million homeless people because of flooding. 41 million. They don't have food. They don't have lodging. They don't have emergency services. They don't have hospitals. They are absolutely going to have a rough time. Many will perish. At the same time, you look at in the United States, for 3 months, Montana's been burning. The worst wildfires in Montana's history. In fact, over 2,000 fires in Montana. And when a natural fire happens from lightning or high heat, and high heat can actually cause fires, then it burns everything in its path, and livestock, farms, ranches, homes, towns. But then it was also massive wildfires in Idaho, then in Utah, also in Colorado, in the state of Washington and Oregon and Northern California. Some of the great, great old hardwood forest, the sequoias and others, were on fire. British Columbia, fires. Up in Canada, fires. In Greenland, which you never would think of a fire in Greenland, they had terrible fires, worst in the country's history. And now we have volcanic eruptions in Antarctica. We have found 91 additional volcanoes that we didn't know existed because they were under the ice cap. We also find that there's a volcano over 1.5 miles high in Antarctica, And some of these, at least two, are now starting to spurt forth, and you start seeing the lava flow coming through the ice cap. Now, that means that the entire bed around these volcanoes, these lava flows, are heating up at tremendous temperatures, which means you're going to have a massive melt-off in different areas of Antarctica. Now, Antarctica is a large continent, and the whole place is not going to melt. But what is happening is many of the buttressing ends of where the glaciers go down to the water, you have shelves, and these shelves would be like you pushing a door closed and someone's trying to open it the other side. These keep the glaciers from going into the water. The Larsen Sea Shelf, which was over 120 miles long and almost 3/4 mile deep, the largest iceberg in history, broke off recently. Now a new line is creating a new split going further up into this area. So more is going to happen, which means now there'll be an unregulated flow of ice calving, massive amounts, trillions of tons of ice capable of going into the ocean, which is going to raise sea level. We're also finding that even a 1 degree increase in temperature of the water will cause an enormous change, a doubling of the sea life, which changes the aquatic feed chain. We see the acidification of the oceans. We're now bleaching out, completely destroying the Great Barrier Reef and other reefs, which billions of creatures use for their sustenance. And then we see sea mammals dying by the tens of thousands because the temperature of the water is too hot and there's a lack of oxygenation of the water. So their food supply is dying off. They're having to go further north to get into water where they can still get krill or some food that they can eat. Whales are dying of malnutrition. Killer whales are dying of malnutrition. So we're seeing things we have never seen before in the way we're seeing it. And we're also seeing drought. In the United States, we have massive drought, unrelenting drought. In most of Texas, in Kansas, in Colorado, in South Dakota, in Nevada, and Arizona, and New Mexico. So these places are not coming back in your lifetime. They will get hotter. This ground is getting hotter. In fact, in South Dakota and Montana, North Dakota, famous for its winter wheat and its hard wheat, it's getting less and less able to sustain crops. Why? Because the soil's heating up and the seeds have not had a chance in the genetic chain of things to adapt to a warmer soil. You see, you can't just plant a seed and expect it to grow if you keep changing the temperature or the moisture of the ground. If you have too much moisture, like you have torrential rains and just massive rains, even as great as monsoon rains coming down where you used not to have that, it floods out the seed bed and rots the seeds or the sprouts. If you have the soil too hot, then the seeds can't germinate. And then when it does start to grow, it stunts it. You get corn that is stunted corn. Nobody's going to use the corn. Nobody's going to buy the corn. So we are now facing the beginning of a massive food crisis in the United States. Here's the bad news. It will not affect most Americans because we don't pay attention. If we have money, we go to the store. There'll be food from South Africa, there'll be grapes from and cherries from Argentina in the middle of January. So we no longer rely upon seasonally grown food in local markets. We can buy anything anywhere. And as long as you have the money to pay for it, you'll be able to have food. But then who's got that money? Well, 100 million Americans have that money. 17.2 million professional class with four per family and 10 million millionaires. That means they have $1 million minus the value of their home. That means after their home, they still got $1 million. And four per people. Per home, you got 100 million people who can either afford the 10 million millionaires and their family, afford to buy anything they want, or you got another over 50 million Americans who will buy through debt, credit cards. So 100 million people can keep a society flowing, certain segments of that society, but they're not the ones who are going to have to worry about the price of wheat or the inflation in dozen eggs, but But a lot of people will in the United States, but the poor people around the country, around the world, they get our products, they're not going to be able to afford it. And many of their own countries no longer can grow. Go to Saudi Arabia. They can't grow almost anything in there. So they're buying land elsewhere. China's the same way. China's not growing a lot in its own country, but it's buying land. The most prosperous forestation in the world and farmland in the world is in Russia. Russia has twice the size of the United States with half the people. And therefore, it has the most oil, the most gas, the most forest, the most farmland, the most fertile farmland. It's got problems, but natural resources are not one of their problems. So the Russian population will survive much easier than any of the countries in the Middle East. The entire Middle East is gone as far as sustainability in the future. And that's one of the reasons Saudi Arabia is now, for the first time in its history, privatizing virtually everything in the country. Everything is being privatized. So what they historically would do is have an enormous welfare state for their own citizens to appease them, but then they would have to pay for everything for them, and they would buy their food and subsidize their food and their education and their health care. Now they're not going to do that. Now they're going to privatize stuff, and when you privatize something, just like Russia did, you have to pay for everything yourself, and you have to pay whatever the market will bear. Well, now they're in deep debt. Their enormous cash reserves, which were close to $1 trillion from oil, are down to where they're actually borrowing money because of carrying on the war in Yemen and their other military conflicts and other terrorist sponsoring conflicts around the world. But they're in a desert and it's getting hotter. That's also true for Kuwait, for Qatar, for United Arab Emirates, from Oman, Jordan, Bahrain, and Turkey. All of those areas are in drought. They're running out of water. And in Africa, Egypt is out of water. And there's now a political battle, which could go into a military battle between them and other countries, getting the Nile water diverted so they get there. Throughout a lot of the world, water wars are occurring. And the little Colorado is supplying over 29 million Americans with their drinking water. All of Nevada and many other places, including Southern California, they're going to be running low on water and out of water. So here where we have drought, we're doing nothing to keep people from going into these areas. In fact, we're doing just the opposite. We're encouraging people to go to Arizona and into South Dakota and into places because they want the tax revenue. And then in Southern California, there is not sustainable. Now, they do get water out of the Sierra Nevadas, and they do get – it's a 400-mile trip to get it down in a canal built in the 1930s. And they do get some water out of Little Colorado, and they do get water filled up in the reservoirs from El Nino, but that's erratic. And you also saw they go through drought. And when they have drought, but they've had rain, then the rain causes all these little seedlings to grow, and now there it goes drought again. So you have flooding, seedling, drought, fires. It's crazy. And we're doing nothing about it. When I say nothing, I mean nothing. We're actually getting developers to go in and buy up land that no one should be living on. Earthquake-prone land, fire land, drought land. And instead, the people are sporting, the bankers are giving these people money, and a lot of the money comes from black investment pools, meaning they will get money from Middle East, from oil barons, from South America, from dictators. They put millions to hundreds of millions of dollars into these black pools. Then a developer has his name on the front, but it's not his money. He goes out and buys 1,000 acres, and then he builds a whole community or builds a building in a place that never should have been taken away from nature. And then people move to this because they have designer buildings and designer furniture, and they have beautiful lawns, and they have a golf course, all of it artificial, all of it. And sooner or later, it all is going to be taken back by nature, sooner rather than later. So you're not going to stop the developers because the developers pay the politicians. You're not going to stop the local community boards from allowing this overdevelopment in areas that shouldn't be developed. Why? Because that's where they get their tax base. If a governor of California was really honest with the people of California, they would start a program to move whole communities, or giving people at least the opportunity to move into whole communities that are made and built and designed for sustainability, where they have a maximum amount of people that are allowed in, They use only green and sustainable and renewable materials like solar and wind and geothermal and wave power, where they have community gardens and people will not be overdeveloped, where the people will not own the property but rather have 99-year leaseholds, where you can come in and live in that for the rest of your life, but you won't be able to buy and sell it. So it can't be controlled speculatively. And that way they can control, the state would own it and say, okay, we're going to build 5,000 homes in this area or 100,000 apartments in this area. And we'll do it with beautiful lawns and everything else. But this is the price of it. So that way you keep the speculators out. Enough money comes in to pay for all this and gives the state or the county that it's in money to have schools, et cetera. They should be doing that. That is proper planning. They're doing none of that anywhere in the world. Nothing. It's like the whole world is so filled with greed and hubris that nobody's thinking ahead. If you don't want to think ahead, take a look at Florida. Right now, I'm providing water and electricity for the people in my neighbors. I always have. My home is 100% solar. When no one else in the entire county, I had solar because they just thought it was stupid. And I remember my neighbor once come by and wanting to look at this generator I put on, and I put a generator on. And it's not an electric generator. It's based on propane because propane's a lot cheaper. And during a storm, when power goes out, propane doesn't require electricity or electrical pump. It's force-fed. Pressure can feed it. Therefore, you never have to run out. And it's a whole lot of money saved. And when you're not using it, just stays in a tank. So if you're cooking with gas rather than electricity, you're saving an enormous amount. And you're also getting off the grid. And where everyone else using city water, I put in wells and my own leach fields. And I did it myself with local contractors because you have to be, you know, you have to get a licensed contractor. But I helped design it and lay it out. So now, let me just tell you what I did. And so this is something for all of you to think about in scale. If you have animals, you have to have a concrete shelter, meaning you get, it's very inexpensive. You bring it up, you have a ramp, and you bring it up about 3 feet off the ground. Then you have concrete blocks, you've all seen them, and you pour them with concrete and rebar, and then you build an entire structure out of them. Depending upon the animals you have and how many you have your vents for circulating air, but they will withstand 190-mile wind. They'll withstand it. If there was a Category 6 hurricane, they could withstand it. So that way, whether you have hoof stock or any kind of creature, it can go in there, and it has a metal door, and you get them food bins up off the floor, water bins up off the floor, so they can have air, they can have food and water, but they're not going to be drowning, and they're not going to be hurt, and it's not expensive. For your home, you should have a good generator. Put it off the ground, because if there's a surge, and if you live near the water, and if there's more than a 5-foot surge, which there normally is, your generator during any storm is going to be flooded. And hence, all the lights go out on all those buildings, clear up and down the west coast of Florida and the east coast. Now, last night in downtown Naples and over in downtown Fort Myers, you couldn't find a light on. No traffic light, no lights in any building because all the generators were flooded. And they were all hooked on to the major city lights. Had they put those generators at the top of buildings, which they should have and could have, but they didn't, because someone decided it would be cheaper to put them down at ground level. And it wasn't. Now look what they're paying for that. Look at all the food that was gone. Look at how are you going to get out of a building that's 28 stories high and you are not physically healthy? You have no way of getting up and down except walking steps. Now you're in a building that has no electricity, no air conditioning, so you put your generators up on the top of buildings, and if you have a home, at the back of your home, you build a metal stand. You can have it out of concrete also. Same way you can encase blocks. You can stucco the blocks to give it attractive appeal. But you put your generator up off the ground. And then you use propane tanks. So at least for 30 days minimum, if it's a small tank, you can run electricity. And then you get high energy efficient a refrigerator and freezer, and you get a high energy, meaning high energy savings or low energy use lights. So storm shutters are essential, but also when you put your windows in, you should get at least Category 5 shatterproof windows. And then you put your storm shutters over, and then you close your doors, and then you put caulking material at the bottom. When that caulking material sets up, water's not going to come under your doors. It can't get through your windows because you got shatterproof windows, and you got an awning in front of it. You've got a metal in front of it, so you're bulletproof. Nothing's going to hurt you then. And if you want, put some straps over your house to help keep that roof down. But you could go into a roof, and why a lot of roofs come off is because they're not secured properly. The trusses are not secured. So if you get the right kind of securing material, which is a heavy-duty material, so where your cross beams and the frame of your house is meeting your trusses, you do your highest quality, highest resistance material, that nothing's going to cause that roof, your trusses, to come separated. And that makes all the difference in the world. And then there's special material that you can put on that's not expensive, that instead of just putting down some black paper and then putting your tiles on top, once your paper goes down, then tar the entire thing with a thick layer. It's rubberized, and it's waterproof, and it protects. And so that's some of the things you can do. And also have a water suit, meaning it right up to your you kind of step into it. It's rubberized, and it goes right up over your body and clear up to your chest. So if you had to go out in the water, you're protected because you're wearing a water suit. Also have a fire suit. I have 5 fire suits. So and by the way, fire came right up to my property but didn't burn anything for a simple reason. A, I had a ladder on every single building. B, you put a sprinkler system on the roof. Remember, you got to look at the opposite. When it's flooding in hurricane season, it's also going to be extreme drought and dry as a bone in the wintertime. And that's when you have all these massive fires. We had massive fires down there also. And most had to burn themselves out. So you take a sprinkler system and you run it across the top of your roof and down the sides and across underneath the lip, much like you put, let's say you're putting Christmas lights on your house, across the whole top, down the sides, and across underneath the lip that comes out, the eaves. That way, if there's a fire coming towards you, you turn on the sprinkler system and your entire building, whether it's a house, a garage, a barn, it is wet. Then you keep stored inside a foam material that's a far retardant, and you go out. If you see you're going to get hit and you spray about an hour before the fire hits, you spray this fire retardant until the entire building is covered in this fire retardant, the roof and the sides, because that way the fire is not going to burn down your house. You have minimal opportunity for that fire burning. Then you always have a trailer, an inexpensive trailer. You can buy them for $400 and they last forever. And that trailer, you have a hitch on your car or your truck. And you make a list, and inside your kitchen, you have a list of the items that must be evacuated in case of a flood, a hurricane, or a fire. And those are the items that you have boxes ready in your garage or in a room, and you take your belongings that you must take out, and you load them in, and you get a 55-gallon drum of gasoline, or if you have diesel, with a pump in it, and you're on your way. And you know where you're going, and you have backup food. You have backup food, you have a water filter, portable water filter, and so wherever you have to go, you could go at least 1,000 miles without stopping. All right? So now you got the methods of going out of harm's way. You got a method of protecting yourself, because most people, if fire's coming off a tree and an amber lands on your roof and you got wooden shingles, which many people have, and you're thinking, oh, my God, my roof's burning. What can I do? I don't have a ladder, okay, and I don't have a fire hose out here. You should always have a fire hose on each side of your house, the entire house, and you can't even see it, by the way, with a sprinkler system, outside sprinkler system, and fire retardant. In hurricane, you have hurricane shutters. You have a wetsuit, just like you have a fire suit. And you have your backup supplies. This way, if you have to stay hunkered down, you've got backup generators, a generator on each building, so you're going to have electricity. You're going to have water, food, freezing, cold. You got it all. You're missing nothing. And every single year, I go to my neighbor. In fact, there's a gentleman, wonderful old man, 90 years old, and I said, sir, I see your lights out. Yeah, I don't have any. I said, come on over, bring your stuff. I have a walk-in refrigerator, and I can store all your stuff so you nothing's left. And he was very proud, and he didn't want to, but he finally, I said, let me help you. And so we took his stuff and put it in a walk-in box, and then I said, here's gallons of water. I can provide all the water you want. Let me know what you want. And that way you have water for drinking, you have water for cooking, you have water for bathing. So if you're helping yourself, you can also help your neighbors and always be a good neighbor. Don't assume your neighbor's got all the food they need or water they need. So I believe in helping people. And then, of course, not everybody. It was just horrific. People left dogs and cats tied around trees as if somehow they were supposed to survive both the storm, which they wouldn't, and the surge, which they wouldn't. They drowned. And these are people that are just inhumane. But if you have that opportunity to have that, then set up your garage as a kennel. You can get separation grating and put it in there, and that way you can have dogs or cats in there with food and water and protected during a storm. And that's important. And I was able to protect I have an animal sanctuary. I do an animal rescue and have rescued over 3,000 animals. So I kept those. Not a single animal was injured during the storm. When the power went out, the generators kicked in, and everything's fine. Now able to go forward and look at where the weak spots are and wherever you got a weak spot. And one of the weakest spots is people don't realize water before it will go in will go to wherever the least resistance is. So, for example, in front of your house, you should dig a 3-foot deep and 2-foot wide complete trench around your entire house and out the back, and then load that with large corrugated pipes, and then put gravel on top of that. Now, you can always put grass to decorate it so nobody knows it's there, or a light mulch to make it look nice. But the reality is that before that water going into your house, it's going to go into that drainage system around the house and back into a system that you won't have that water coming through your house. That's so important. Does it take time? Yes. Does it take effort? Yes. But I'd rather have my time and effort spent in 3 days of digging a trench and then filling it with corrugated pipe to take my water and guide my water where I want it to go rather than having come into the house. Hence, no flooding, not a drop of water got into the house. And also, I put extra care into my roof to make sure that the trusses and the straps that hold that together went beyond code. And it made a difference. Also, having backup cell phone, and you can convert your cell phone with an app into a walkie-talkie, and therefore have a neighbor or someone else have that walkie-talkie, so if there's an emergency, at least you can take care of each other. Also, every home in America should have a first aid kit. If you can afford a flat-screen TV, you can afford one of the best. In fact, you can afford the best home kit, because there's not going to be emergency after 35 miles an hour. They're not going to go out. Fires and trucks not going out. Ambulance not going out. Police not going out. So you have to realize what happens if I cut myself, bruise myself, injure myself. You have to have what should go into a kit. You should have your colloidal silver, manuka honey, a topical antibiotic cream, and you should have bandages and that which can create a compress. in a kit. So those are the things that we need to do to help protect ourselves. Now, the larger picture. First and foremost, we've got sunspots that we should be concerned about. And as I've mentioned on many previous programs, sunspots are the biggest single danger to the environment that exists. Because if a sunspot hits the Earth at a high degree of intensity, it can knock out all the electronic satellites, everything in a given area. And you would have no capacity to survive because it would also knock out not just your refrigerator, but all the electric grids because it would burn them up. There'd be no way to replace or repair that grid. And all of our infrastructure is decrepit. It's old. Look at Florida. Every single tropical rain, electricity goes out for periods of time, maybe for an hour, 6 hours, or a day. A hurricane, weeks or even months. A solar panel, it could go out, a solar storm, solar flare, it could go out and you'd never get electricity again because we don't make those generators. They're made in China. So our grids are terribly old. We should have all brand new grids, and the grid should be designed to go offline the moment a solar storm hits because it will burn up the grid. But you can get new grids that would be turned off so the grid wouldn't fry. We're not doing it. Every member of the House of Representatives voted to yes in the Senate because a lobbyist from the power utilities companies didn't want to spend the $1 billion, said no. So profit exceeded common sense and reason. So we should be having full preparation, everything you would prepare yourself for a hurricane or fire, you should also prepare because you can use the same thing, except I would have bicycles. I would have a backup inner tubes and pump and patches. I would have a big knapsack, and I would have powders that I could put that I could use in a portable water filter where no matter where I had to drive to, at least I'd be able to survive in the process. We're going to continue to build in Florida. Big mistake. Florida's a beautiful place. You just can't imagine what it's like to go out at night and early evening and look up and see the pinks and the blues and the cloud formations. It is not just bucolic, it is ethereal, it is magnificent. The weather, for most of the time, is terrific. Here's the problem. It's a problem of water. We have too much in the Everglades, and we shouldn't be building in the Everglades. But developers will build any place. And so we overbuild on the ocean because everybody wants the ocean. Everybody wants a water view. In fact, I lived on the ocean for 15 years in South Beach, had a beautiful place. But when I saw that the water was coming up at night and tide, not a storm, no rain at all, just every night the tide comes in the morning it goes back out and it leaves seaweed lines. And I just saw it coming further and further and further. And over a two-year period, I said, this is it. And then I started seeing Alton Road, which is a road it's the road that goes up and down north and south on South Beach. It was flooding, not because there was any rain. It was just the tidal surge. They've invested over $225 million, but it's only able to get some of the water out. And they're now running 24/7. And now a surge comes and they're flooded and they're worthless. Now the mayor is saying that they've got to build an elevated road. Good luck with that. I've been all over the Miami area, everywhere in Miami. Where in the world are you going to buy the property that's going to have to run the whole length from Homestead clear up out of Miami, going north towards Fort Lauderdale? Where are you going to buy the land? And you're going to have at least 6 feet elevation. That means building a new highway and then having all the land behind that for people to live on. It would be the largest land excavation movement in American history. And you're going to do this with money from what? A bond? Good luck with that. No, it's not going to work. So now you have about $100 billion minimum. I've heard as high as $182 billion in real estate down in Miami and Fort Lauderdale and Boca and West Palm Beach and down towards the Keys. All that's going to be devalued. I remember in 2007, in the height of just before the crash, I was driving back to my ranch, and it was at night. It was a Sunday night, and something really struck me. In fact, when I got off the causeway, I turned into a side street where the art center is, and I drove down, and I started going into every single building. There were like 23 new buildings, and they were all full, meaning there were no empty apartments, but there was no lights on. I pay attention to these things. So I said to the doorman, "Filled building? Oh, yeah. How many people live here?" "Well, very few." "What percentage?" "Maybe 5%. "So who are buying these?" "Oh, people speculating, buying and flipping, buying, flipping." And a person I knew had told me that he had bought 6 apartments in South Beach. Now, this guy is a real estate broker. He's not wealthy. And I said, "Where are you getting the money for this?" He said, "Well, I bought this one. I flipped it. I made, you know, $12,000. I'm buying that one. I'll make $20,000. And look, they're giving it to you for no interest. So if it's costing enough to buy these things, I'm just going to keep buying and flipping because it's just going to go through the roof." I said, "Every bubble is going to burst sooner or later. Get out of it or you're going to be caught with greed being why you kept in it." He just laughed it off. And then 5 years later, he was bankrupt, as were all those other people, school teachers, you know, on $70,000 a year owning 5 homes. Everybody wanted to get in on the bubble. Well, that bubble burst, and we lost about $7 trillion, the American consumer did. That bubble is back with a passion, but now they're looking at astronomical amounts of money. In Manhattan, they're getting as much as $8,000 a square foot. That means that a 2-bedroom apartment in the new buildings, and I walked down from work to the studios here, and I counted 104 buildings between 72nd Street and Weston Avenue and 27th Street. 102 new buildings. That's $14 million for an apartment. Now, use the math. If we've got 10 million millionaires, and they already have homes, these builders are really dealing in a strange math. They must not realize that it's not like you wake up tomorrow and say, "We've got a market for 12 million millionaires and 1,541 billionaires, and we're going to have apartments that we're because of the 6 years it takes to borrow the money or get the money investment syndicate and to buy the land that's going to be overpriced, and then to build up buildings that are going to be overpriced, and then to overprice the apartments. We got to get our money out, so we're going to invest $3,000 a square foot, and we're going to get back $6,000 a square foot." Well, A, there's already more apartments, new apartments in Manhattan for billionaires than there are billionaires in the entire planet. So good luck with that stupid kind of economics. So now we have those apartments already being foreclosed on. We have buildings that are not even able to be finished because they didn't anticipate. Gee whiz, where's all this money going to come from? Yeah. Do you think the average New Yorker is going out there and saying, "Hey, do you hear? There's a new apartment just opened on such and such, and it's going for a great bargain. It's only, you know, $80 million. It was $100 million, so let's go in there and buy it." It's not going to happen. The people buying apartments in New York go down the same street. I just walked the other night, the skyline, when it was dark. All the apartments are dark. They're all sold, but they're dark. That means people from Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Saudi Arabia and all these other places in Argentina where there's an unstable government or where there's insecurity about the currency, they're putting the money in New York real estate thinking that will never end. It is. We're in a bubble and it's going to collapse. Now, but it gives a great income for the state through state taxes and for the city. And as long as people can afford it and they're not financing it, well, then it's, you know, it's a good place to park their money, park it in New York real estate or in Florida real estate or in Malibu real estate. But these 10 million millionaires, they already have their homes. The billionaires already have their homes. Anything they're doing now is just a trophy property. So now I see the following. Here's what I'm predicting, and I hope I'm wrong. But I'm predicting that you're going to see from now on, in probably another 2 to 3 times the next year, what we just experienced in Texas, the worst rain in American history, with flooding up to 50 inches, and then within the next 7 days, an additional 15 to 20 inches, getting 2.5 years worth of rain in 8 to 10 days, with a clay cap soil and no place to drain it, and all the chemical factories and all the refineries and all the toxic 14 Superfund toxic sites, none of which have been inspected. All that makes one incredible toxic stew. You're going to see that happening over and over again to where it won't even make the news in any major way. It'll be a quick, short story because, oh, we've already been there. If it bleeds, it leads, but we've already seen that blood and we're not going to get the same interest. You're going to see Florida hit over and over again with 3, 4, and 5. I believe in the next 12 months, you're going to see a Category 3 to 5 hit the East Coast and really do damage in one of the major cities. And you're going to see more forest fires, worse forest fires, and you're going to start seeing forest fires upstate New York. You're going to see people finally waking up and saying, wow, how much challenge do we want to continue to be here? And you're going to see people starting to get out of the real estate market, the high-end people first, and the people who can't get out are going to be the working-class people who are locked in. They've got mortgages. They'll be underwater in their mortgage, and they can't afford to move, and so they're stuck. Now, the news media I don't trust, and I don't like how they covered the story. It's as if they wanted it to be a worse story, if they wanted more damage. They had to focus upon a trailer park. Well, look, a trailer park, a bunch of tin cans waiting to go into the air. What they didn't show were the gated communities where people would spend $1 million on their home because you didn't see those flooded and you didn't see those destroyed. So you showed the places where people are most vulnerable, right at the water's edge. They showed no example of how it was done right. They only showed example of people were vulnerable and how nature destroyed their environment. Well, what they didn't have is any expert on talking about how there's a difference between flood insurance and hurricane insurance. If the flood, if your hurricane hits your house roof and tears off the roof and then floods your house from the roof down, you can be covered. If that roof is not destroyed and the water runs off your roof and pools at the bottom of the house and floods back into the house and destroys your house, you're not covered. 80% of the people will not have any insurance whatsoever in Texas or in Florida. We're $25 billion in the hole already in debt with our flood insurance. And the insurance companies already were lobbying. That's where the governor had sided with the lobbyists. He's a global denying, a denialist. But the major politicians are global denialists. And those that are not have sided with the insurance companies to protect their profits. So you shouldn't be living anywhere near water right now because you will be victimized by it. Then you're not going to be able to afford to pay for the deductibles. Let's say you have a $500,000 home, you may have a $30,000 deductible, meaning you have to pay for the first $30,000 in damage before the insurance kicks in. And then they're being very careful about what they exclude, just like medical care. We won't cover for that because it's not in your policy. So I'm suggesting that people start now looking for places in the world to live where they're not going to be a victim of making wrong choices. If you have the means to move, the places right now that are livable, that are minimally affected by global warming and its catastrophes, natural catastrophe, the best place would be in smaller communities. Smaller communities in Vermont, in Maine, in New Hampshire, in Wisconsin, in in upstate New York and the northeast section of New York, these are some of the best places. There are some good places in North Carolina, in Northern Virginia, in northeast West Virginia. In northeast Texas is probably the number one place I would look, because you've got Louisiana, but not in the flood zone. You got mountains. When you got mountains, you're not going to have that flooding. You have the lakes, you have water, you have unlimited water, you don't have the drought, so you're in a good place in northeast Texas. But the rest of Texas, forget it. And forget all those dry states. Oklahoma, tornadoes. They had 2,000 earthquakes in Yellowstone Park, combining Montana and Wyoming, in the last week. They had over 200 earthquakes in Oklahoma and also in Kansas. So you're going to have a big one out there soon. Not a good place. Plus, they got gas hydrofracking, which is polluting the air, polluting the water, and you're going to have devaluation. So I wouldn't be living, me personally, I wouldn't live in any place except Northern California, be fine. And now you got Washington State and Oregon, who are both very susceptible to fires, and that's going to get worse, not better. Montana is now on fire, the whole state, more than any other state in America, over 2,000 fires. I would get away from states that have drought or susceptible to earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, drought, and flooding. So those are the places I would not move into, because you're going to have a problem if you do. I would also start looking for smaller communities where you can also have your own independent life, but also shares things in common with more progressive-minded people, the educational system, the arts communities. One of the best arts, new arts community, it used to be Towson, New Mexico, but then that got so damn expensive, and now it's not sustainable. Nothing in New Mexico is going to be sustainable now. It was at one time, but too many people, too much use of the natural resources, and climate change has really slammed it. And then also they gentrified it. What used to be a wonderful place where hippies and artists could come and enjoy themselves, as Sedona used to be, now it's all overbuilt, overgrown, and not sustainable. But you go down to Austin, one of the most progressive cities in America, but it's too expensive for the inhabitants. So they're moving north now. They're going up towards Waco and Mineola, Texas. I predict that Mineola will be one of the most progressive artist communities in the next 5 years in the United States, and inexpensive. That whole area is inexpensive. We're overspending. I would not buy anything at this time, anywhere in the world. You're going to see the euro crash and burn. You'll see the dollar stay strong, because we're not capable of doing anything except printing and spending money. Our government is now, according to the person I spoke with this morning, my figure is maybe a little bit of out of date, maybe about 6 months out of date. The latest figure I had was $172 trillion in debt, and he says it's now past $200 trillion. That does not include derivatives and the bubble in derivatives, the bubble in the commercial real estate market, the bubble in student loan, the bubble in credit cards, the bubble in car loans, the bubble in mortgages. This is just a massive debt that will never be repaid. So the dollar will stay strong because we will not default on a T-bill, treasury bill. But it also means that I'd be taking my money out of banks, because many of the smaller regional banks are going to go broke, and I would put money into gold, silver, real gold, real silver, not certificates, take possession, and don't put it in a bank, and then also in T-bills and in cash. That's my own personal advice. What people do is their business. But if you buy anything now, remember what I'm going to tell you. We're in a bubble. It's going to crash. You're going to lose it all. Oh, but it's such a good deal. Oh, so I got this great deal. No, the deals come after crashes, because the next crash we're going to come is going to be the biggest correction in world history. I predict that between $15 to $30 trillion will be evaporated with the next crash. So you can look at homes that are now $1 million, it'll probably be going for $200,000. I even have a list of at least 100 castles. I'm not talking about rundown old, I'm talking about beautiful castles, including the castle hotels, that, believe it or not, I just got one this morning in a beautiful environment, gorgeous. The land is gorgeous. It's 1,000 years old, for $800,000. 10 years ago, this had been $8 million. So because people don't have the money. People are not going away and spending the money. And you cannot support yourself on just what the millionaires are doing. And what happened, all those other people, the professional class, they have been living like they're millionaires. Their kids have been spending money like they're millionaires. They've been creating debt like they're millionaires. And they're up to their eyeballs. In fact, here's what, I will not mention him, but he's a neighbor of mine. He lives in my building here in New York. And we had a conversation this morning, and he counsels people. He's not a banker, but he's a money manager, meaning he tries to show people how to financially plan for their future. And guess who his biggest clients are right now? Professional people, lawyers, doctors, engineers, accountants, CPAs, professors, who overspent, got into debt, and now they're broke. So he's helping them sell their property, their cars, their real estate, and there's no more jobs for them. There's no more income for them. The people who are surviving are savers. The people who are survivors are non-debt people. If you have debt, get out of it now, because you're going to get sunk. And he says that these people's kids went to all the private schools, and they all had to go to Cancun, and they had private jets, and all this stuff they did to show that they were rich. Well, they weren't rich. They were upper middle class, but trying to prove that they were equal to rich in their consumption, their massive consumption, and now they're broke. So we're going to go from that 10 million millionaires probably down to around 5 million millionaires, and we're going to go from that 17.2 million professional class down to probably around 6 million professional class who actually have equity and savings and can use it. The rest is just all debt. And so we're going to be sinking into debt. People, restaurants are going to close. Theaters are going to close. And it's already happening. Retail stores, the brick-and-mortar stores are closing. Thousands of jobs being lost. It's going overseas. But the dollar will stay strong. The euro will crash. The pound will crash. I believe more countries will leave the euro. Greece, Spain, Italy are basket cases. They're broke. Ireland's just behind them. And I believe they should reduce the Chinese have to reduce the value of their currency, the yuan, and to stabilize. But they will survive. And Americans will survive. We don't all collapse. But environmentally, we do. Now, the people in those big skyscrapers down in South Beach, they're not going to drown. And the ones in Houston, they're not looking to get into a lifeboat. But the value of that property is going to collapse. And look what they didn't do. They didn't stop the massive unregulated development in Texas, nor in South Beach, nor in West Palm Beach, nor in Malibu, or any place else. Anywhere you wanted to build and make money, you had partners willing to let you do it. But what about all the poor people? What about the middle class people? What did you do to try to protect their interest? Did you have 1,000 large generators to go into every neighborhood in the neighborhoods before this happened to keep them electric on? No. Did you send 20 to 30 million bottles of water down there, which you could have done? No. Did you set up emergency shelters, big giant ones above ground with medical facilities and sleeping facilities so people had to be there for a week or a month? They could be. No, not one. You had to open up arenas like the Germain Arena, which is good for the owner that opened up. But you're only in there to get, you know, whatever the Red Cross. And don't give a penny to the Red Cross. They're rotten. So anyhow, so be aware, our government is not prepared. We were not prepared. Yes, great for the Americans who got out, but you got out under a rush. And unfortunately, a lot of people didn't. And now they're going to suffer for it. Property values are going to crash. Okay? Because people are not this foolish. They realize this is the beginning of what's going to be a whole new planet. And how many times a year do you want to go through this? And then watch what happens when the properties, when you get the word people are moving, others are going to get moving, property value is going to collapse, the income for the area is going to collapse, infrastructure is going to collapse. And then what are you going to do then when you don't have all those millions to go in and protect the people who are still staying there? Get out of the areas when you can. And I believe the exodus should start in a reasonable and responsible manner. Start looking now. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening, a special edition of our Progressive Commentary Hour on the world we live in and what we can do to make better choices than what we have. Have a nice day.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.